Welcome to the Union Jews Podcast. The UK's only all things union show. Carefully curated for your digital downloadable listening pleasure. Hello, 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 and welcome to Union Jews, the UK's only all things union podcast. I'm Simon Sapper, and in this episode, Musicians Union General Secretary Naomi Pohl chats to us about the amazing range of work undertaken by the union, representing and defending members, effective lobbying of government, and raising standards in the sector. How do you organise when, in many cases, barriers to entry are so low and people will actually pay to play in order to get a gig? How do you protect jobs in orchestras and choirs when government funding is cut? We cover all this and much, much more in our conversation. First up, though, we turn to Mel Sims, Professor of Work and Employment at the University of Glasgow, for her Thought for the Week. This time, Mel reflects on being taken well out of her comfort zone in the search for new understandings on the future of work, and how the Musicians' Union and others are in front of the curve by some way.
In the past couple of weeks, I've had two amazing opportunities. The first, I was hugely honoured to be able to give the speech as the University of Glasgow gave an honorary degree to Mr. Gilbert Ombeau, who is the new Director General of the UN's International Labour Organization. The second was to attend a philosophy conference about the future of work and income. And both occasions were marked by some really insightful conversations about the future of work, how paid work is changing, how we interact with technology at work, and how we shape fair futures in our working lives. I think it would be fair to say the conference took me significantly outside my comfort zone, but they'd invited me to speak, and I was really curious to hear about what philosophers might be thinking about the future of work. And there was a huge amount of food for thought. It turns out that philosophers are really well equipped to think through concerns about how capitalism is changing, and many of the issues that they're thinking through relate to comments in the interview in this week's episode. I probably should have realised that philosophers ask really great questions, and whilst they don't always agree on exactly how we should define work, they're fundamentally interested in what kinds of work get paid and what kinds of work don't, which takes them into the kind of territory that would be entirely familiar to listeners of this podcast. Issues around the opportunities and threats of automation and AI to human work, especially in the creative industries, are definitely hot topics, as are concerns about how taxation and payment might work as humans interact with new technologies in different ways. And these are all topics that the Musicians' Union is addressing right now in navigating these frontiers to ensure that creators are paid and that they're paid fairly. I was at the conference because of my background in understanding trade unions, employers, and the collective regulation of work. And it was hugely useful to have had those conversations with Mr. Ombeau just the week before, which really served to reconfirm my own commitments to the ideas of tripartite regulation of work and employment as we move into these new futures. It was fascinating to me that while there was a huge amount of discussion at the conference about what should be the role of the state in regulating the future of work, nobody except me explicitly discussed the importance of organised labour in this space. So the example of the Musicians' Union really shows us what a mistake it is to miss that aspect. In her interview, Naomi discusses how the union can shape the behaviours not just of governments, but also of employers and engagers to really improve the conditions of work for musicians. Now, arguably, I've made a career making the point that the future of work shouldn't just be constructed by our bosses, and I hope I've always explicitly acknowledged the excellent work done by unions across all sectors of the workforce in the UK and beyond in helping us think through what that future of work could play out to be and should play out to be. The past couple of weeks have really focused my attention on how desperately we need to remake the case for a say over our working lives, and that unions are really the only effective mechanism to do that. The focus on what we might call industrial democracy or work democracy is something I'm intending to recenter in my writing and thinking in 2024. So you can definitely expect to hear more on this theme next year.
Thanks very much indeed, Mel. I think it's particularly interesting and important to be reminded that there's a whole broad seam of philosophy that sits alongside our thinking on work and employment and regulation, and that this can be a really valuable source of support in our campaigns for fairness and dignity in employment. And that leads neatly on to Naomi. The Musicians Union has over 34,000 members across the UK working in all sectors of the music business. You can trace the union's origins back to Manchester in 1893, and they represent musicians in orchestras, choirs, recording and performing artists, those working in film and TV. And the union's fashioned some iconic campaigns, like Keep Music Live and Work, Not Play. Naomi was elected in 2022, having previously held a number of posts in the union. The result was announced on International Women's Day, particularly appropriate as she is the first female General Secretary of the union. At the time of her election, she described her top priorities as including improving pay, obtaining better royalties for stream music, and tackling sexual harassment within the music industry. I was delighted and grateful that she found time in a hectic schedule to record a really interesting and thoughtful contribution to the podcast. Well, Naomi, thank you very much for taking time out to join the Union Jews podcast. It's delighted to meet you and to have you on the show.
Good to be here.
Your own trade union journey that's brought you to the position of General Secretary. I mean, could you walk us through it?
Absolutely, yes. So when I was at university, I studied English and drama, a couple of topics, kind of subjects where people say to you, you know, what you're going to do with that in a sense. It's kind of, there isn't necessarily a clear career path, but I knew I wanted to work in the arts. So I was volunteering in a little theatre in North London in the evenings after work. And the people there heard about a job going at the Writers Guild of Great Britain, which is the trade union for script writers and screenwriters primarily.
Yeah, I know it well.
Yeah, it's a lovely trade union. And so I got a job there and I started working in admin. Then I was running the events there, and then I was promoted to Assistant General Secretary after taking on quite a lot of the negotiation. At the time, we were quite short-staffed and it's quite a small union. So I was really chucked in the deep end in my 20s. Wow. With negotiating, yeah, dealing with the BBC, dealing with ITV, dealing with the National Theatre. And I absolutely loved it. Because we're in the creative industries, there's, you know, a handful of unions representing creators. We're quite a close-knit group. It was easy to make the transition to the Musicians Union, which is a bigger union. And I've been there since 2009, and I just like really passionate about it, really passionate about representing freelancers, creative people. I'm not a creator or performer myself, but I feel really passionate about representing people who do that. I know they've got so much skill and talent, and it just feels unfair that the pay doesn't always match what they put in.
So was the progression up the ladder within the Musicians Union reasonably smooth and regular?
Relatively, yeah. I mean, and at the Writers Guild, I suppose. So, yeah, the Musicians Union, I started off working, representing music teachers in London. Well, then I went to work in the recording and broadcasting department. So I was looking after session musicians. Then I ended up running the London region. So dealing with all the musicians in London. So that includes the West End, it includes buskers on the London Underground, Royal Opera House, all the venues in London. And then I ended up running the recording and broadcasting department and then moving on to Assistant General Secretary. So sort of, yeah, I did move up. That's not to say, though, that I didn't go for jobs during that time within the MU that I didn't get, you know. So not entirely smooth, but yeah, I was really keen to move up, and I've enjoyed being able to represent musicians in different areas of work.
But it means that the grounding that gave you in terms of all the areas of the MU's activity, you really can claim to have seen everything from the boiler room to the boardroom.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think that's what's put me in a good position to be elected General Secretary. First of all, I represented a lot of music teachers. Then I represented a lot of the session musicians. And then I represented a lot of the West End musicians and the opera and ballet and the orchestras. So I feel like, because I moved around a bit, a lot of musicians got to know me and got to trust me. They saw me in action. I got to know a lot of the employers as well, which I think is important. You've got to have those relationships. You've got to be respected by the employers and the engagers as well as by the musicians.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's been a positive for me.
So what do you think is the importance of the MU to the sector? And how particularly does the union make a difference at that sort of sectoral level? Like, yeah, it's obvious how it works at an employer level, at a particular theatre company or in an orchestra. But if we're talking sector-wide, what's the difference that it makes?
Well, we work with a lot of other organisations representing creators. So whether that's in the broader creative industries or whether that's particularly in the music industry, I think we're a powerful voice because we represent 34,000 musicians. So unlike some of the other organisations in music, we've got a really big membership. So our voice is very authoritative on behalf of musicians. And we come with a really great evidence base because we've got activists who tell us about their experiences. We can run surveys of our members and we can get really good data. So I think that makes us a very powerful voice and a powerful advocate for musicians. But I think, you know, collaboration is a word I often come back to in this role. I think it's important that we collaborate internally with our members, but also we've got to externally collaborate, whether it's with the trade bodies, whether it's with other trade unions. Like, we work closely with Equity representing actors, with BEC2, because their members tend to be affected in certain workplaces in similar ways to ours. So we're dealing with the same employers and engagers. And we're quite a lobbying and campaigning focused union. So we do a lot of lobbying work, talking to MPs in the Labour Party, but also in recent years, because we've had a Conservative government, we've been trying to influence the Conservatives as well, which has been interesting. But I think it's important that we play all of those roles and we deal with as wide a range of people as possible.
Well, yeah, I mean, one has to deal with the world as it is rather than as one wants it to be. But I mean, I you know, there's been some impressive achievements of the union in terms of presenting the evidence collected at grassroots level and at local workplace level to government, even this government, that enables them to have a basis on which to make some reasonable choices when it comes to, say, taxation arrangements that apply to orchestras, for example.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So some of our big achievements, I think, in recent years have been music streaming, where it started off as a grassroots campaign, getting featured artists involved. There's a campaigner called Tom Gray, who's a musician himself, who ran a campaign called Broken Record, which was mainly an online campaign, but he got a lot of artists involved in that. And then the Musicians Union took it on. We made it the fixed streaming campaign. We've worked really closely with Tom, but we got a select committee inquiry because of our campaigning, because we ran a petition.
Yeah.
And we've had high-profile musicians and artists involved in the campaign, which I think has really got the attention of the government. So we've now got the government actually actively looking into fair remuneration for music streaming. And other examples in the orchestral sector, I think where we've had high-profile disputes in particular workplaces, for example, at the moment, English National Opera Orchestra are looking at potentially losing half of their work.
Yeah.
Where we raise awareness with the public, we get people to sign petitions, we get people to write to their MPs. It does get the attention of MPs and it becomes something that's discussed frequently in government, which means you've got a chance of the government making a change, or you've got a chance of the Arts Council stepping in and making a change. Because a lot of these issues, they come down to money at the end of the day.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to say it's partly a question of muscling into the mainstream, but it's also, we're talking about a sector which, according to This Is Music, was worth nearly 7 billion quid last year. It's a phenomenal sum of money.
Yeah, and the Chancellor has actually identified the creative industries as being a key growth industry. So he's picked 5 industries and he thinks the creative industries is part of that growth, you know. So there's obviously some interest, which is fantastic, but the money's not always there. And, you know, it's difficult because we deal with the commercial parts of the sector where sometimes, frankly, there's money sloshing around, but it's just not finding its way to our members. And then other areas, like in the arts, where it's subsidised, opera and ballet struggle because the cost of putting on what they do, the cost of touring at the moment is incredibly high, and the government subsidy just isn't keeping pace with inflation. So we've got, I would say that's more of a difficult argument in a way. But then, you know, on the commercial side, we have to take on the tech giants and the major record labels, which isn't easy either.
Yeah, goodness gracious. I'm just got a picture in my mind of the different issues that potentially could come across your desk all day, every day,
Yeah.
If we look at one part of the market, though, which is like live music, how do you organise effectively in an area where there are low barriers to entry, there's a high instance of people who are prepared to put up with low pay, no pay, paying to play? How can you grab hold of that and try and introduce and establish higher standards?
Well, we do it at various levels. I suppose one of the things we do is speak to musicians every day. You know, our regional offices have hotlines. You know, we get members calling in with their issues on a day-by-day basis. So there's a lot of activity at that kind of grassroots level. What we do is we educate and empower our members to actually get a better deal. So with freelance musicians, they're not always that easy to organise because, as you say, we're not dealing with one employer here. We're dealing with thousands and thousands of engagers who might be, you know, single person businesses. It might be a local pub. It might be a small local music festival. So it is difficult. It's difficult to police, but I think if we can empower our members to negotiate better deals and to use our contracts, which have got standard clauses in them, we can chase unpaid fees for them. There's a certain element there where we can organise our members to help them get a better deal. But also, we would campaign at a greater level, I suppose, tackling employers when we know that there's bad practice. We had a campaign called Work Not Play, which was about musicians standing up and saying that they won't work for free. And we advised our members, if you get approached to do a charity gig and they're asking you to do it for free, you can take the fee and say, I want to be paid for it. I want to be paid an appropriate rate. And if you choose to donate some of that to charity, that's up to you. But you should be paid for the work you do. You can bet most of the other people involved in the event are getting paid. So why should the musician be unpaid? So it's things like that. It's campaigning, but also equipping freelancers with the tools that they need to make sure that they get a fair deal.
And of course, it would be wrong to assume that all engagers are bad.
I mean, the
Fair Play Venue Initiative, for example, seems to be a prime example of saying to engagers, look, if you voluntarily want to say and put your hand up and say, we use decent standards when we engage people to play in our venue, fill your boots.
Yeah. Well, again, this comes back to collaboration. I think I'm not one of these union leaders that necessarily subscribes to the idea of all bosses are bad bosses. I think there's lots of people who work in music who are deeply passionate, and same goes for the wider arts sector. So you might be running a music venue, but you might actually be a musician yourself. Yeah. So yeah, I wouldn't say that there's a lot of people out there necessarily trying to rip our members off. Some are, don't get me wrong. But I think more broadly, most people would like to give musicians a fair deal. Sometimes there's financial constraints. So I would rather work with employers and engagers to try and achieve a deal that works for both parties, make sure our members are paid fairly. And where we've got problems with the government and the Arts Council, we should be collectively taking those on together.
So looking across the range of activity and the subsections of membership that the MU organises and represents, what are the challenges? What are the priorities that come out of that the union is currently addressing or are bleeping most loudly on your radar, say?
Well, there's multiple issues at the moment. I think, you know, obviously the pandemic was a really difficult time for musicians because most of them couldn't work at all. Mm. Most of them lost their whole income. So during that period of time, we were lobbying the government for more support. We were working with venues and studios to get them back open. We were also at that time dealing with the impact of Brexit on touring. So to a certain extent, that issue faded into the background a bit during the pandemic because musicians weren't touring anyway. Yeah. The minute touring got back up and running, we were hit with that problem again. And musicians are still having problems getting into Europe to work, which is really, really difficult. So that's something we're lobbying on constantly. We've got the threat of artificial intelligence, which potentially could replace some of our members at work, which is very concerning.
Yeah, I read an article in which Microsoft were trying to assert that they could rip anything that's published and use it for any other purpose, and it wouldn't be a breach of copyright. But I couldn't get my head around that at all.
Yeah, so their position at the moment seems to be that if an AI system ingests existing artistic works or musical works, so if your tracks are up on Spotify, they're ingested into an AI system. That AI system then pumps out some new musical works, that there's no copyright infringement taking place there. Whereas we would say that potentially is a copy. What they say is that the AI is kind of training on those works. So it's learning from them. And it's what it's doing is looking for patterns and statistics. So here's an example. If you asked an AI system to generate a new script for a crime drama, it could potentially ingest all the scripts for crime dramas, and it would go, right, the main characters tend to look like this. The main characters tend to say things like this. And it could come up with a new script. Is it an infringement? I think there's that old adage, which I won't get exactly right, but about if you give a million monkeys a typewriter and they all just bash away, eventually one of them will come out with a work of Shakespeare. Yeah. And I don't see how you can possibly have AI systems generating new works where they've ingested existing works and not come out with chunks of text or chunks of music or sounds that are substantially similar. I think there's going to be a lot of copyright infringement cases ahead. So we need to get the law to keep pace with the technological change. We need to make sure that creators are protected. Their consent should be sought if their works are going to be ingested. They should be fairly paid. I think very much like the music streaming issue, these campaigns, they're about music technology, but really they just come down to fair pay.
Yeah, fair pay and fair play, actually, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, I asked you to describe for our listeners and for me the priorities you're dealing with, and I leapt on one and dragged us off.
That's all right. No, it's like the AI issue is particularly interesting at the moment, and it's just moving really quickly. But yeah, so I'd say artificial intelligence and music streaming are sort of similar issues that are very much a priority. The orchestral sector is really facing a crisis. So another area that we're focused on at the moment is trying to protect our members' jobs and protect our members' pay when we've got a sector that's just, you know, horribly underfunded and really struggling to survive.
And I suppose where the orchestra sector overlaps with broadcast work, you know, the BBC, the freezing of the licence fee, for example, is effectively a very significant cut.
Yeah, and so the BBC was proposing job cuts in their orchestras and also to close the BBC Singers, which is the UK's only professional full-time choir.
Yeah.
And the public and the sector came out and said, no, we want the BBC Singers. We want them to remain. And actually they are now. They do have a secure future, we believe. We're still talking to the BBC about it, but we feel much more positive about that. Yeah, so it shows that when we take action, we can make change, but it's a very difficult climate at the moment, particularly in the orchestras.
Yeah, and I suppose if we roll forward as we enter an election year, and of course the union's closely involved as an affiliate of the Labour Party, without more money, are the problems just going to stay the same?
I think we're going to be in a much more sympathetic environment, is what I would say. It's not to say the current government have done nothing for the arts. So you mentioned the tax relief earlier, that the orchestral and theatre tax relief was extended at a higher level, which definitely helped to a certain extent, but it's not enough. I think it's going to be very hard for Labour coming in because obviously they are inheriting this very difficult economic situation, but we think that they're going to make very different choices, and their track record on arts funding is much better. They've made promises about music education, which is another priority for us. They've made promises on music streaming. They're promising to fix some of the issues that Brexit has caused for touring in Europe. And because we're Labour affiliated, we've actually been in the rooms talking to them about their promises, which has been great. We've been able to have some influence, whereas with the Conservatives, we're always hitting up against a brick wall, just even trying to get into the room to have a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big advantage of affiliate status when plans are being drawn up for sure. The focus is also international as well, and we've mentioned Brexit in passing, but things like the Beijing Treaty for example, on intellectual property, property rights. Now, stop me if I'm getting this wrong, but the Beijing Treaty was a treaty about remuneration to musicians and others when their work was broadcast or transmitted in some way. It was made with the EU. But it wasn't implemented before we left the EU. Now we've left the EU. The government has said, well, we'll look at it again, and is currently consulting on how the Beijing Treaty might be extended to musicians in the UK. Is that approximately right?
So it's an international treaty. I think it has to be adopted by individual territories, and it has to be adopted by 21 territories, I think, in order for it to become an international law. So, yeah, so the UK signed up to it, but they're talking about how they would implement it. And basically what it would mean is where our members at the moment, if they perform on a commercial audio recording and it's played on the radio, they get a guaranteed royalty payment. Yep. We would get the same in the audio-visual side.
Right.
So it's for audiovisual performances. So it's something we've been waiting for a long time, and we'd be delighted if we get it. The phrase is equitable remuneration. So basically means fair pay, essentially.
Right. So musicians would know in advance what the royalty and other arrangements would be, and that's what they'd get.
Well, they get a guaranteed royalty through a collecting society. So you don't necessarily know exactly what the amount of money will be, but you know that if your performance is used, you will get a guaranteed payment. So it's really important. And it's when it's provided for in legislation, it means that record labels can't pocket it, for example.
Yeah.
You know that it's definitely going to go direct to the performer.
Wow. Wow. And I think, listeners, if you play back that last 3 or 4 minutes of Naomi and I's conversation, you'll recognize the complexity of the issues that the Musicians Union has to deal with in protecting the interests of its members, I think. If you look back over your period since you've been elected General Secretary, especially given the pathway that took you there, what's most surprised you about the role?
Wow. Well, I think you're right about the complexity of it. So it's, you know, there's such a wide variety of jobs that our members do that you'd always hit up against a new problem. So members will always bring issues to us and you still think, oh, that's a new one. You know, there's still days where something comes across your desk and you think, wow, yeah, we've not come up against that exact issue before. Mm. But I love that, you know, I love the challenge of it. We've got mostly a freelance membership, so they're working across such a diverse range of workplaces and very informal environments as well, like I said about music festivals, you know. So it's not like some of the bigger unions where they're dealing with big employers like Royal Mail. It's a very, very different kind of union, but it's exciting because every day is different, and dealing with the music streaming issue and thinking that we could make change here that would, if we could change the law, we'd be making the lives of all working musicians better. So it's really rewarding when you see that you're actually making progress. And when the government starts to listen, it's incredibly rewarding. Yeah. So yeah, it's great. I think I'm always just surprised by the resilience of our members as well, is another thing I'd say, that they have to deal with such difficult situations. A lot of our members are on low incomes and they juggle like you would not believe the number of different jobs they hold down, freelancing. They might be gigging in the evenings. They might be doing a bit of session work during the day. They might be music teaching, and they manage to hold down these careers, and they're so highly skilled that, yeah, I'm always very impressed by their adaptability, especially post-pandemic.
Brilliant. Well, Naomi, thank you very much indeed for sharing those thoughts and views, and best of luck going forward.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. My thanks to Naomi, and I really hope you enjoyed that. And if you are in any way part of the music industry or wanting to be part of the music industry, then for goodness sake, join the union, Musicians Union, all one word, .org.uk. Couple of standout points for me. First, the huge wealth of the UK music sector. £7 billion. And yet so many musicians are struggling and bits of the sector are starved of resources. Not a great advert for trickle-down economics. Second, the disconnect between government plans to grow the creative industries massively and that reality of struggle and shortage of funds. And third, the really significant yet deeply opaque and complicated improvements to things like taxation or royalties for AV workers by the adoption of the Beijing Treaty. Hats off to the union's negotiators on that particularly. You can find out more about the MU at musiciansunion.org.uk. And as ever, there is the companion blog post to this podcast over on the Makes You Think website. That's makes-you-think.com. All the links, background and signposting you need. Do pay us a visit soon. You can contact the show by email at unionjews@makesyouthink.com or at jewsunion on X. Do let us know what you thought about any of the issues covered in this episode and what you'd like to see covered in future shows. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think. If you could rate, like and share the podcast, that would be truly magnificent and would really help get the word out. You can also support the show by buying us a virtual coffee at our Ko-fi site if you fancy it. That's ko-fi.com/unionjews. Ko-fi.com/unionjews. That's the address you need. A couple of other things to let you know about. Union Jews has a sister show, Union Days, scenes from the scrapbook of union stories. And Union Days was shortlisted in this year's Independent Podcast Awards. You can find Union Days wherever you get your podcasts. And Union Jews is part of the Labour Radio Podcast Network, a portal through which you can access over 200 union-related podcasts and radio shows. There's something for all ears, and you can access the portal at Labour Radio Network. That's all one word, and Labour spelt without the U, labourradionetwork.org. So that's just about us for this episode and this year. We'll be back on the 10th of January, when our featured guest will be Gawain Little, General Secretary of the General Federation of Trade Unions. In the meantime, my thanks to Mel and to Naomi, and above all, to you for your company over the last half hour or so. It's been great to have you along. I really hope you enjoyed what you heard and will join us next time. Meanwhile, season's greetings to those celebrating. It's great that the days will soon be lengthening again, at least here in the Northern Hemisphere. Solidarity with all those fighting to defend and improve terms and conditions. Stay safe, be kind, and I'll see you on the next episode of Union Jews. Bye for now. You've been listening to the Union Jews podcast, presented by me, Simon Sapper, music by Scott Holmes, a Makes You Think production.